The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, everybody. Producer number nine. So much more than a producer with a little two-finger wave.
No, I did a point today. Oh, I'm going to keep mixing it up on you now because I think it distracts Gil just enough. I like it. Got to keep him on his toes.
What gave you that impression? Got a good show today. Carl Sack. We have two guys on the show. Let me couch it this way. Two guys on the show who genuinely move lines when they release plays. Carl Sack in the NBA from KillerSports.com will join us here in about a half hour. And in hour number two, not that we're here to have him move lines, but just know that this is his history. The greatest sports bettor of his generation, Rufus Peabody, will join us in studio. And I'm pumped to just chill with Rufus for a little bit. He made his hay where he first rose to prominence, where he first became known to the general public, or really just around Vegas, first of all, before that even, was in Super Bowl props. Super Bowl props specifically after that Steelers-Cardinals Super Bowl. Remember back in the day?
Mm-hmm.
The old Santonio Holmes toe tap to win it for the Steelers against the Arizona Cardinals.
Great game.
What was that? After the 2008 season, I want to say. That was where he first sort of made his mark. And the rest is sort of Super Bowl prop history. We'll talk to Rufus about that background and what he's thinking about this year and how this has changed over time. Right. For the hardos who used to exploit this and now have to sort of approach it a different way. Jason Weingarten also joining us from Under a Cloud of Smoke to talk Super Bowl and baseball, a little baseball on the show today as well. We'll talk, of course, Super Bowl 59. I want to start, though. We don't usually start Monday mornings with something that happened before yesterday. But obviously, the biggest thing that happened in North American sports, and maybe global sports this weekend, was what went down Saturday night in the National Basketball Association. I think everybody had the same exact reaction, which is, did Shams Charania's Twitter get hacked? How is this appearing on my phone? Remember, there was a couple weeks ago where the phone had this breaking news of some dunk that Ja Morant made over Victor Wembanyama and it didn't even count. It was after the whistle.
Yeah.
And I was in here and I was like, get this off my phone. Like, just get it off my phone. So this goes down Saturday night. Luka Doncic traded to the Lakers. I don't know if you were like me. My eyes, the message to my brain didn't work the first time. What am I looking at?
He was hacked. He was for sure hacked. I had just gotten home for the evening, and like it popped up. I start getting texts. No, he's hacked. His follow-up tweet to try to clarify to everybody.
Yes, this is
real.
This
I'm
is
like,
not
well,
a drill.
Well,
yes.
Clearly he got hacked because if you send that tweet, you must be hacked, right?
Here is the details, of course, if you missed it, if you were trapped under a heavy object this weekend. Lakers receiving five-time All-NBA, Luka Doncic, Maxi Kleber, Markieff Morris from the Mavs, Dallas acquiring Anthony Davis, one of the 75 greatest of all time when we'd had that 75-year anniversary. Let's not sort of sleep on that. Max Christie and the Lakers 2029 first round pick. Jazz also involved in this. They received Jalen Hood Schifling, the Clippers 2025 second round pick, and the Mavs 2025 second round selection. So at once the shock sort of wore off, I think my first reaction was the same as most too, which is, wait a minute. They just traded Luka Doncic for that? And without diminishing Anthony Davis at all, still for that? No Austin Reeves, no other future firsts included. How were both of those things not included? And we'll get to that here momentarily. Like, in a NBA landscape where Rudy Gobert got traded for four firsts.
Four. Mikal Bridges got dealt for five.
What are we talking about? What is this? First of all, the betting line moves. Again, just to get the perfunctory stuff here out of the way, the betting lines move. The Lakers essentially cut in half and more to win both the Western Conference and the NBA title from about 40-1 to now around 16-1, where they're hovering right now.
Mm-hmm.
The Mavericks go the other way on the trade from 16-1 or 20-1, doubling, if you will, or 30-1 is what we're showing in terms of after the trade for the NBA championship from 12-1 to 16-1. After the trade for the Western Conference, Lakers, we have at 40-18, Western Conference from 20-1, 9-1. Doncic, just put Luka in perspective for a second. Luka Doncic, LeBron James, who are now teammates, are two of the only three players in NBA history with career averages of at least 25.7 boards and 7 assists per game. They're the only two active ones. The third is Oscar Robertson. That's it. That's the list. Only Michael Jordan, Elgin Baylor, and Wilt Chamberlain have scored more in their first 50 playoff games than has Luka Doncic. By the way, that's not in shape Luka Doncic, for those of you who want to get to that part of this, which we will. Among players with at least 400 games, Doncic's 28.6 point average is third in NBA history, behind only Michael Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain. Jordan, Wilt, Luka. That's the list. And at 28.6, by the way, points per game, the highest career average player for a player, that's the highest career average, talking about Luka now, for a player at the time he was traded since 1975 when the Bucks dealt Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to the Lakers. Doncic, for those who have a short memory, third in MVP voting last season, averaging 33.9, 9.8, 9.2. Easily one of the greatest statistical seasons in league history. Took his team to the NBA Finals, oh, by the way. And then, Kelly, my brain goes into, okay, if I was drafting, if we do that old, you know, barroom exercise, if I was drafting an NBA team from the beginning here, who would be the number one pick? Okay, Victor Wembanyama's one. I'll even throw in Jokic, even though he's about to be 30 years old, because he's Nikola Jokic. And then after that, it's, I don't know what, Luka or SGA?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wherever you want to go, yeah.
And then I struggled because I love sports and I love sports history. And I just think about, like, what's the sports equivalent to this? And first of all, I got, you know, I sort of asked that openly to friends. I asked that, you know, on Twitter openly. Or I don't know if I asked on Twitter, but someone suggested, Richard Eng on Twitter said, what about Nolan Ryan getting traded after his fifth season or at the age of 25 from the Mets to the Angels? And I said, well, I'm not old enough to remember that, but after five seasons at the age of 25, Nolan Ryan hadn't even had one good season yet. We knew he threw 100 miles per hour, I think they knew, but nobody knew what he would become truly. So that's not it. Then there was football equivalent. Someone said, what about Ricky Williams trade? Well, the Ricky Williams trade, Ricky Williams hadn't played a down yet in the NFL, and Mike Ditka and the Saints traded the house for him. And sure, Washington ended up being able to draft multiple great players, Champ Bailey, John Jansen, LeVar Arrington, but they didn't do anything with this. But anyway, Ricky Williams hadn't played a down in the NFL. It's not the same thing. And then someone said, what about the Herschel Walker trade? Because that was in season.
Yeah.
It changed a franchise. Dallas ended up drafting Darren Woodson and Emmitt Smith and Russell Maryland with those picks. Yeah, but even Herschel Walker at that time had only had one good NFL season. He was great at Georgia. He was great in the USFL. But he had only had one good NFL season. There is no equivalent for this. This is the first time in NBA history that two reigning all-NBA players have been traded for each other mid-season, according to Elias. This, to me, in terms of just a shock level, was more like a Buster Douglas knocking out Mike Tyson thing, where you'll never forget where you were thing, in terms of just a trade equivalent. There is no equivalent. That's what I'm getting at here. There's no equivalent to a guy who, at 25 years old, regardless of what you think about him, his shape, and we'll talk about that next, is everyone believes he's a future Hall of Famer. Everybody believes he'll win, I don't know, one or two championships. And, you know, of course he'll win a couple MVPs. Like, that's kind of baseline we're thinking about for this guy. So why did this, how could this have happened? How? The two knocks, of course, are he is chronically out of shape. He was topping out over 260 this year. Injured. He's only played 22 games this season. He hurt his ankle on Christmas. He hasn't been back since, though he's supposed to come back here in relative short time. So was it so bad in Dallas? Were they so just completely bent about him not being able to stay in shape? They convinced themselves he was not going to sign a Supermax with him. By the way, this takes the Supermax off the deal now for Luka Doncic. Costs him like $100 million, though he gets to opt out, I think, at the end of next year. What possible reason can you come up? And even if you believe those things, let's say you buy into that, you're like, yeah, that's exactly right, Gil.
Yeah.
He's not in shape, and maybe he wasn't going to sign the Supermax. The point still remains, how do you only contact the Lakers to make this trade? How? That is the malpractice here, because, and I'm not even exaggerating, what we just talked about before, Gobert for 4 first rounds, right? Rudy Gobert. You could have, after the season, conceivably, right? conceivably have gone to the Houston Rockets. Let's say the Rockets don't do so well in the playoffs. You could have said, hey, how about Amen Thompson and Sengun? You could have gone to the T-Wolves and said, how about Anthony Edwards? These are not outlandish requests. Went to one team. Please explain that to me.
It makes absolutely no sense. I can't. It's the one thing that we still need. We need answers on, because it's not like, look, we've heard that some of the things we've heard since is, okay, they're worried about the agents getting involved then if it opened up more than one. It doesn't matter for your long term future of your team. You're responsible to get back more than this. And I think what it. I heard Tim Bontemps put it like this, Gil, and I think he's right. For the Dallas Mavericks to make a move like this, it's not only that you do not believe in the future of Luka Doncic, it's you don't believe that Luka Doncic is going to show you ever again what he's already shown you. Think about all the playoff stats you just rolled through.
That is out of control.
It's the only thing that makes sense. It is the only thing that makes sense is that things have gotten so bad with Luka and the conditioning and whatever that they fully believe that they won't even see the Luka that we saw from a year ago again.
Mavericks GM Nico Harrison, quote, I believe that defense wins championships. He told ESPN's Tim McMahon, explaining his motivation to deal Doncic for Davis. I believe that getting an all-defensive center and an all-NBA player with a defensive mindset gives us a better chance. We're built to win now and in the future. He later went on to say this is more of our timeline. Are either the Mavericks or the Lakers better this year?
No, both teams got worse this year.
Mavericks seemingly trading the long term for, in theory, the shorter term. Mind-blowing. More on this, and of course, Super Bowl 59 on the other side. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. Are you taking us in? We appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It's a numbers game. Kelly Bidlin behind the glass because right now in his chair, the person that I call, and I'm not sure if he will object to this characterization or not, but I call him the most successful sports bettor of his generation, at least this side of the planet Earth. I don't know what's going on the other side of planet Earth, but certainly in this hemisphere he is. He is half of the Massey Peabody Analytics team. He's half of the Bet the Process podcast with his buddy Jeff Ma. And of course, he's a co-founder of Unabated, in addition to being maybe the most fascinating and the most successful person of his generation in gambling. It's Rufus Peabody, everybody, here in studio. How you doing, man?
I object.
You object?
I object.
You object to that characterization?
Vehement objection.
Seriously a vehement objection?
I mean, maybe I'm the most successful that you know, but I don't think that means I'm successful in the most successful in the entire sports betting universe.
Do you know that you're not? In terms of this generation,
I don't think any of that stuff is falsifiable.
That's correct. Nor is it verifiable.
Right.
Perhaps.
Well, yeah. There's so many people doing different things.
Yeah.
Like, I think if you said that I was the most successful golf bettor, I think that that would make.
You will accept.
That is, again, I don't know if that's the case or not. Yeah. But certainly there's certainly people doing things far more exceptional than I am.
Okay. That's very humble of you. That's very modest of you. Let me see if you'll appreciate. Let me see if we can get this agreement on this. For those who are unaware, Michael Lewis, great author. I think my favorite author. I think I speak for a lot of people when they say is your favorite.
Mine author. As well.
The Blind Side, The Big Short, perhaps most famously, financial books. You know, are his thing from Wall Street. But for our purposes, Moneyball, I think, is probably the one that most people would gravitate towards. Anyway, he does a podcast called Against the Rules. And season 5 of his podcast had to do with sports betting. And Rufus, you were pretty much, now you might object to this too, you were kind of the central, you were kind of the focal point of this. At least starting in episode 4, you were. And one of the things that Michael Lewis, who is more articulate than I can ever possibly be, but he crystallizes thoughts very well. One of the things he said, which really resonated for me, and I'm curious if you will buy into this, is he said that Roxy, our buddy Roxy Roxborough, was sort of the guy who, you know, was maybe the first known person to think of analytics when it came to sports betting. He obviously recognized ballpark factor before anybody else did. And Michael Lewis framed it as there was never a bridge from Roxy to the new generation. And he characterized you as that bridge. The first person sort of this generation that thought in the same way. You were looking for explanations as to why things happened in sports. Do you accept that you are that bridge and that you hold this very fascinating part in sports betting?
I would say me and people like me just came along at that time when computers had the processing power and the data was available to be able to answer some of these fundamental questions that someone like Roxy wasn't able to answer back in the 1970s, 1980s, early 1990s.
And I think the other thing that came up that was interesting to me was there was some notion of, were you like this? So Roxy was a bettor who then thought to think of things analytically. You were a guy who you grew up outside of D.C. What high school did you go to, by the way?
T.C. Williams High School.
T.C. Williams.
Virginia. Remember the Titans.
Northern Virginia. Remember the Titans. That's right. You went to Yale. You wrote a thesis on the baseball betting market, the efficiency of the baseball betting market. And you were not a bettor. You were the opposite of Roxy. You didn't start out as a sports bettor. You were just a guy with a really inquisitive analytical mind.
I was a sports numbers nerd.
Okay.
Like I was the statistician for the basketball team my senior year of high school.
You were that kid.
Yeah. Yeah. I played all the sports, yeah. But even more than that, sports occupied a place in my head.
And so you read an article about Roxy and Las Vegas Sports Consultants?
It wasn't even about Roxy, because by that time, Roxy had sold Las Vegas Sports Consultants to CBS Sportsline.
Okay.
But I read an article on ESPN.com by Gene Wojciechowski about LVSC for Selection Sunday. So he was embedded there. He spent Selection Sunday with the group of odds makers there. And basically, the article said, "You think you're sharp, you're what these kind gentlemen would refer to as a square." Like, you know, yeah. And I was like, this seems like the coolest place ever to work.
And so you lobbied for an internship.
Yeah, I like cold called. And I got the runaround and got the runaround again, like call back in three Sundays at 3 p.m. And I did. And they like nobody was in the office that had, you know.
And eventually you pestered them enough where they gave it to you.
Yeah. Well, it was one of those random coincidences where if that had not happened, I wouldn't be doing this for a living. I would be in a completely different industry probably.
Brief parenthetical aside, when you and I have been friends for over a decade now, we used to have talks about even more than 10 years ago, how you always felt like, well, is sports betting really what I want to do with my life? Is there a more, and I'll paraphrase now, is there a more noble cause? Do you still have those internal dialogue debates?
Oh, definitely. It's, I don't know what, I don't think there's just one thing to do with your life, though. And I don't know if I can necessarily do anything more meaningful career-wise that takes advantage of, I guess, my skills, but I think it's certainly something I'm thinking a lot about and how I can find more meaning in other areas of my life.
This is why, by the way, and I hope I don't embarrass you with this. This is why, like, if you are in fact the bridge, if what Michael Lewis is, how he characterized it is correct. If you are in fact the bridge from Roxy to a generation of more analytical bettors, I'm so glad it's you, because you're a thinker and you're not one of these bettors with a DNA strain that is, while smart, also feels like they have to tell the world how smart they are and how everybody else is dumb. You're not that guy. So I appreciate that about you.
Well, 10 years ago, I think I was a lot more that way, Gil.
Yeah, you were.
I was.
I will agree.
I think yes. When you're younger, you think you know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And as you get older and you get wiser and you know more, you realize how little you actually know.
Agree. And I think we all sort of, I mean, if you're not growing, if you're not learning, you're probably not doing this life thing right.
That's
back to you. So you go to
Las Vegas. You're probably not going to continue to be successful betting.
What's that?
If you're not growing and learning.
Yes, that's right.
Because the markets are growing and learning.
You always have to adapt,
mm-hmm.
For sure. No market remains static like that. So we go back to the day. So then you're at Las Vegas Sports Consultants. How long is it before your brain toggles to, wait a minute, this is fascinating on this side of the desk, but perhaps my calling is to actually do the betting side of this?
Well, I was betting there that summer. So I did an internship before my senior year. I was betting. I was learning about correlated parlays with the home underdog and the under in baseball. And I was getting like a crash course from these people that had been doing this for their entire lives. And so I kind of got like the, you know, I'd gotten sort of the theoretical education at Yale. I got the very practical education at LVSC. And so I went back to college and I had an odds maker at LVSC that would actually get down for me. You know, he would, I could send him baseball plays and he would get down for me. And so I kind of got the bug, and what I loved about it was the scoreboard. I could bet something. I could see if I was right or wrong.
Instant feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not many things in life that have quite the instant feedback in that way. Your big moment though was the Cardinals Steelers Super Bowl. I want to say after the 2008 season, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that was probably my highest leverage moment as a professional or as a bettor. I was not a professional bettor at the time.
And you were getting free rolled by others.
I was getting free rolled by someone in the office, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
And I put my entire bankroll in action and borrowed like $10,000 from a friend who was confident enough in me.
And it's, and
I'd given him a bunch of picks to bet himself, which like went 10-0 somehow.
So somehow. And by the way, the most famous, by the way, Michael Lewis refers to this in Against the Rules, which is your most famous one. And I remember it from closer to that time was, you know, Gary Russell to score the first touchdown of that Super Bowl, which, again, based on everything you do, your numbers, the way that you modeled it, showed that it was a far, far likelier outcome than what the odds were saying it was. And within that, there is a bet mm-hmm. to be made.
And I think that was a situation. I don't remember all the details where Gary Russell might not have had a lot of touchdowns during the season, but he was getting the short yardage carries. And so if you're just modeling something based on the outcome rather than the sort of fundamentals that lead to it, you would say, oh, Gary Russell doesn't get a ton of carries, doesn't get a lot of touchdowns. But
you don't watch this Super Bowl. How do you spend that Super Bowl?
I'm playing golf at what is now the TaylorMade little par three course south of the airport.
Yep.
Because
you can't stand to know what's happening.
I was so nervous. So nervous. I just like, I couldn't imagine watching that game and having fun doing it. And so I just was like, I'm going to check the scores at the end.
Have you seen that game to this day?
No.
So
I've seen the highlights of the James Harrison interception return.
So when you finally turn on your computer and you find out Gary Russell scored first and then everything else went your way, or not everything, but most things went your way.
It was a pretty incredible moment.
Elation, a validation that everything you're doing could be your life's work.
I was not thinking about it in that big terms, but certainly elation.
Let's put it this way.
Relief and elation.
Had it gone the other way, would we be sitting here today?
Well, I'd considered, no, we probably wouldn't have, but if it had gone the other way, I had thought about that before I looked. And before I made these bets, I was like, well, you know what? If it doesn't work out, like maybe this wasn't the industry for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you talk to most successful professional bettors, they had at some point a moment where they had to run well early on.
Yes, that's probably true. Harala Bob tells that story too.
And I think if you look at the people that are actually the most successful, like the billionaire bettors types, they at some point way overbet their bankroll to be able to get and had variance go their way. Otherwise, you know, otherwise they would never have, you know, be able to get to that level, because that's a billionaire bettor is a pretty remarkable level.
That is how Rufus's Super Bowl prop career began, and he made a cottage industry of it through the years. We'll get to that, and eventually we'll get to a few bets anyway from what he's made on Super Bowl 59 prop wise. Rufus Peabody here on A Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Get ready for Big Game 59 with a big deal. It's your final week to save $59 off a VSiN annual pro subscription when you sign up with promo code ANG. For just $181, you get a full year of VSiN Pro, including daily best bets to help you cash more tickets, exclusive betting splits from DraftKings and Circus Sportsbooks, 24/7 video with full access to the VSiN Watch app, plus all our betting guides and expert picks for the Super Bowl and upcoming March Madness. The special offer disappears after the big game, so don't miss out. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe and use promo code ANG to lock in your savings. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Gil Alexander, Rufus Peabody, kind enough to hang with us here at the studio here at Circus Sports. You've never been inside of this studio?
I've never been inside it, no.
I would not have had that. We didn't have you here once? Mm-mm. Or was that the D?
Was it the D?
Only the best for you.
A lot of time at the D.
Oh, only the best for you.
Bar Canada.
So I first became aware. Well, I didn't first become aware of you because we met at a Celtics game at Sloan.
Is that where we met?
I think so.
When we would get a suite for the game, yes, back in the day, me and the betting group.
Yep. And we would be, and Michael Craig used to wrangle me in there.
Michael Craig.
Yeah.
Great
and
guy.
So, your biggest sort of moment, I think, was a Washington Post article about you doing Super Bowl props early on. That's kind of how I think most people became aware of you, at least outside of Vegas. Your most successful Super Bowl prop season was what?
You mean which year?
Which year?
You know, I would say ROI-wise, that first one, but... And actually, the first one with the betting group in 2000, that would have been the 2010 Super Bowl for the 2009 season.
Which game was that?
That was the Colts-Saints.
Colts-Saints.
Colts-Saints. Everything, you know, we actually hit exactas on both teams, the 31-17. But at the time, we probably weren't betting as much as we bet now. So I would say two of the most memorably good ones were the Falcons-Patriots. Despite the fact that the Falcons-Patriots went to overtime, the one guy we had a lot of overs on was James White. Mm-hmm. That worked out.
That worked out very nicely.
And
should have been MVP, wasn't it?
Yeah, I agree with that. We had James White MVP, and I was.
What was the worst?
And then the Rams Patriots was a very good one too, just because there was like 3 points scored by the Rams, and like all these unders cashed. The Rams exacted to score exactly 3 points.
Wow.
But unfortunately, now because of that Super Bowl, we no longer have a lot of value on these exact point bets for these really low total numbers.
The year that the Patriots played the Falcons, which you said was a big one for you, I happened to spend the second half at the South Point Casino with Chrissy Andrews and Vinny Maliulo in their office. And so I observed, if you remember, as the Patriots comeback, 28-3 famously was the score that the Falcons were leading by. When the Patriots comeback first begun, they got to 28-9. And you had, because I know this from Chrissy, right?
Yeah.
He started to, like, I could tell he started to get a little nervous. And I was like, what's wrong? He goes, well, Rufus has me stuck for six figures at nine if the Patriots end up at nine. Now, in real time, because we now know this looking back, this comeback obviously was epic. They were only stuck on nine for, what, 15 minutes of real time. But in those 15 minutes, he was definitely nervous about it. But you,
I mean,
those
it had
are the
to be like a 10 to 1 at that point.
Yeah.
Or better.
So
to stay at nine.
But when the Patriots did play the Rams, you actually did hit on a number. The Rams
hit the three. But the funny thing is Zach White, who I worked with for many years, and actually we are doing stuff together for the Super Bowl again.
Oh, just, good.
It's fun. It's so much fun to be working with him again. But back during this Super Bowl, we weren't. And he beat me to most of the best numbers on those with my own numbers, with my own charts.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
that I had made back then. So
using your old
charts.
Yes,
exactly.
Oh, wow.
I kept trying to tell him, the charts have been updated. There's new data. Like, you know, you can't just use the old stuff. It's not going to work as well.
He tried to just get
could
him
see
off
through
it.
That. Yeah.
It's like, all right. What was your worst Super Bowl?
Oh, by far, it was the Eagles-Patriots.
Eagles-Patriots. Oh.
That was the 2019 Super Bowl for the 2018 season.
Oh, the Eagles, the one where the Eagles won.
Yes.
Gotcha.
It was, you know, the Philly special.
Yes. Nick Foles.
We went out. We were at my partner Train's house on the Legacy Golf Course. We were watching the game there. And I'll put it this way. At halftime, we went out and drunk, like, played one of the par three holes there. The signature holes, the 10th hole.
Your spot.
It didn't matter what happened in the second half. We were screwed.
And you knew it.
Yes.
Wow.
We took a huge bath on that one, for sure.
Define screwed for us, if you would.
Like, ROI percentage was negative 20-something percent, probably, at least.
What are we talking, six figures?
Oh, yeah, easily.
Easily six.
Yeah.
Okay. But still, over the years, a great calling card for you. It goes without saying. How has it changed? Here we are now, February of 2025. You've been doing this for more than a decade and a half. How has it fundamentally changed for you?
Well, the way it's changed in that you have books with legalization post-PASPA, you have books offering kind of esoteric props every single week. So DraftKings is booking, will there be, I don't know if they're booking, will there be a roughing the passer call, but They are,
oh, even like in a week 11 or week 12.
They're doing defensive props. You know, will there be a score in the last 3.5 minutes of the game? Will there be a lead change in the fourth quarter? Like, you can bet, you know, double results, like halftime, full time, team to score first, wins, all that stuff, like every single week. And so they're getting that feedback from their pricing because people are betting into it. And they have data people, third party providers in some cases, providing them with that pricing. And so they can price it a lot better than they used to be able to. Whereas before, you had books offering Super Bowl props and then not offering these same props every other week. And so they weren't getting that feedback. And in some cases, they would book a prop once a year and not actually take note of where the line moved. And the example I can think of that's most accessible is Johnny Avello at the Wynn and the will there be a roughing the passer penalty prop, which every year he opened at -115, -115 for the yes and the no. And like, as you know, that should be the no should be a substantial favorite of more than -200.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really exist anymore. So there isn't, and the fact that the props come out right after the NFC and AFC championship games on Sunday night at these US like DraftKings, FanDuel book type books means that it's not the Westgate opening on Tuesdays, which used to be Tuesday, and being the first operation to put props up, and then everybody sort of following, but there being that sort of, you know, it just being their opinion with no market basis or anything like that, and so there used to be these huge edge huge opportunities when openers came out, and there still are occasional mispricings, but it just becomes it's such a small percentage of our portfolio now.
Mm. Can you share a few that you've made this year? Super Bowl 59.
So this year I did not actually grind the opener skill. I didn't bet at Westgate on Thursday.
Wow.
I went skiing on Monday.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I used to literally pull it all night or Sunday night, worked Monday, and then have all my everything done that Monday night. This is like 12 years ago.
So do you have none in your account right now? No props at all?
I might have bet like two or three.
You willing to share one or two?
I think I bet yes on three unanswered scores at -160.
Yes, three unanswered scores. So three scores by the same team in a row, mm-hmm. exception of 2-point conversions and extra points.
Yes that there will be.
Yes that there will be. Okay. Yes. Okay. So the way it's phrased, the yes is the favorite.
The yes is the favorite.
Yes, that it will happen. Yes.
Right. It doesn't. When you think it's one of these props that's kind of counterintuitive if you haven't bet into it or thought about it before that much, because you're like, well, three and that's these teams are. It's going to be a close game.
Right. I've always said it's the one that flummoxes better the most. Where I got confused right here is it's usually phrased, will a team score three times in a row, and the no is the one that's juiced.
No. It's always the yes that's the one that's juiced.
Will the team score three times in a row? Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah. Yes is juiced.
You think
correct.
That the no should be the favorite
right.
in a way.
That's right.
If you...
I got that twisted. But yes, -160 is low enough where you played it.
Yes.
Okay.
I just know that from my experience with game props and stuff that I was like...
So you don't have to think about it. So is it that generally speaking, now I think you alluded to this last year, generally speaking, people are just betting overs now? Or excuse me, people are betting, if you're going to bet, overs... Do it early, but if you're going to bet unders, wait till towards game time. Is that generally the way to
go? And I would say it's the same thing in terms of betting on things to happen versus betting against things to happen.
Yeah.
So the no, like, will there be a defensive or special teams touchdown? No. You know, will there be a fourth down, like, conversion by this team? No, right. If you're betting those types of things, you're going to get better prices at game time. And if you want to bet on them, bet early.
That didn't used to be the case so cleanly. Back in the day?
I think it always was.
Yeah.
To some extent. But we just used to get so much of our value from these openers that we weren't thinking about betting on game day.
Gotcha. But now, what percentage of your bets is on game day now, prop-wise?
It's going to be 75%. And it's going to be like 95% Wednesday and later. Well, that's probably 99% Wednesday
and
later.
So that's the biggest fundamental difference. That clearly. Okay.
But we're more relaxed about it now.
I can tell. Weren't you just in Australia for 2 weeks during football season?
Yeah. Yeah. Whitewater rafting off the grid for 10 days.
Man is very relaxed. More with Rufus on the other side. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.